Shabbat shalom. The story of the Rooster Prince goes something like this. Once upon a time, a prince woke up one morning and decided he wanted to be a rooster. The Rooster Prince took off his clothes, crouched low to the ground, flapped his arms like wings, and walked around the castle, crowing like a rooster. Cock-a-doodle-doo! Everywhere he went. He came downstairs for breakfast and said, cock-a-doodle-doo! To his parents, the king and the queen, and sat underneath the table, naked and pecking at the floor. You can imagine how his royal parents were royally alarmed and dismayed. They called for all the magicians, physicians, and experts in the land to come and fix their child. Days, weeks, months went by, and the Rooster Prince was still flapping around the castle, calling cock-a-doodle-doo in his birthday suit, and waddling like, well, like a rooster. No one was able to convince the prince that he wasn't a rooster. The king and the queen had almost lost hope until one wise man showed up. The wise man nodded to the sovereign leaders and gently said, "Give me a week and I will help your child." The king and the queen, knowing this might be their last chance to be able to have dinner company someday, agreed to let the wise man help. During dinner that night, the wise man watched the Rooster Prince, and then he did something shocking. He took off his clothes, crouched low to the ground, flapped his arms like wings, ducked under the table, and crowed, cock-a-doodle-doo, and pecked at the floor, just like the Rooster Prince. The king and the queen were about to have the wise man removed when they noticed the Rooster Prince was carefully watching the wise man. The Rooster Prince nodded his approval to the wise man, now his rooster friend, and they pecked at the floor quietly together. The next morning, when the Rooster Prince arrived at breakfast, the wise man was still crouching under the table, flapping his arms and crowing and pecking at the floor, but now he was wearing clothing. The Rooster Prince looked at the wise man strangely, but the wise man simply shrugged and replied, "I'm a rooster, but I am a rooster who wears clothes." The Rooster Prince thought, nodded, and went to his room. He came back downstairs wearing clothing. And the two sat under the table, pecking at the meal together. The next morning, when the Rooster Prince arrived at breakfast, he noticed that the wise man was again wearing clothing, but now, instead of pecking at food on the floor, he was pecking at a plate of food. And again, the wise man replied to the Rooster Prince's questioning eyes, saying, "I am a rooster, but I'm a rooster who uses a plate." And so the Rooster Prince decided also to use a plate. Day after day, the wise man showed the Rooster Prince that he could be a rooster who used utensils, that he could be a rooster who sat at the table, and that he could even be a rooster who walked upright without flapping. When the end of the week came, the Rooster Prince was sitting at the table, eating a meal with his parents, and speaking to them without crowing. As an educator, I have always loved this story. The idea of meeting a learner where they are, of helping an individual to try out different things gradually and explore new options. I've often shared this story in hopes that it will help us to understand that we cannot reach people if we do not first listen to them. We cannot help others to grow if we dismiss them outright. But now, I am not so sure if I should continue to tell this story. Now I wonder if this story might tell people that there is only one way to be a prince. That you cannot be a prince who challenges the norms and breaks the rules of royalty. Or even worse, that you cannot make your own rules, your own way in the world, even if you are comfortable being naked, flapping, pecking under, and crowing under the table. I worry that the nechemta of this story is that we must follow the rules that others create and determine for us. If this story is telling us that we can only follow other people's paths, not take the one less traveled, or maybe even the one no one has created yet, then this is a story that I can no longer tell. This is a message that feels counterintuitive to the ways the world around us is progressing, and counterintuitive to what it means to be a Jew. Because these worlds we live in, they push us to tell stories where we decide for ourselves who we are and how we will live out that identity to its fullest. A few weeks ago, Webster's dictionary added the non-binary pronoun they to the dictionary. There's a great deal of debate around the grammar of using a plural noun for a singular pronoun. But Webster's acknowledged that, in fact, they has been used as a singular pronoun for hundreds of years. Emily Dickinson used it in a letter she wrote in 1881, and even earlier examples have been found. Throughout the past few summers, we have seen and read numerous articles about summer camps exploring non-binary cabins or pushing their programs to be more inclusive for non-binary campers and staff. This exploration of gender and the expression of non-binary gender is fascinating. It calls into question what it means to have a binary gender structure and how much of our world is reliant upon that. What interests me most, however, is that people are standing up and saying, "You may see me one way, but that's not who I am." They are declaring that they do not necessarily see themselves as the gender that matches their sex and are possibly not comfortable fitting into one neatly boxed category of gender at all. What we are witnessing is a generation of people who are not afraid to stand up and declare themselves rooster princes. What's more, they are pushing society to allow them to live in a way that they aren't trying to fit into our preordained structures or systems. They are comfortable eating off the floor, even if we aren't. They refuse to let society tell them they have to eat at the table. They know who they are and will not let anyone other than themselves determine and claim ownership of their identity or of its expression. The power of identity, the importance of knowing oneself and being true to oneself, is not something that our tradition stays silent about. Instead, texts, stories, biblical quotes scream to us that this concept of claiming identity, of knowing ourselves and declaring it to the world, is our constant struggle on earth. Each time we come to pray, the words above our aron shine down upon us. Da lifne mi ata omed. Know before whom you stand. The easy interpretation of this text is that we should remember that when we stand before the ark, when we stand in prayer, we stand before God. But the more challenging and personal interpretation is that when we stand before the ark, when we stand in prayer, we stand before ourselves. we must know who we are to be able to pray honestly and to request things from God. We must own our motivations, our needs, our egos, in order to achieve kavana, true heartfelt intention in our prayer. On Erev Rosh Hashanah, my colleague, Rabbi Netov, stood at this bima and asked us to remember who we are on these holy days of remembrance. But we cannot remember that which we are not sure of. We cannot remember that which we allow others to decide for us and do not claim ownership of. We cannot remember things that we keep hidden or try to fit into someone else's sense of right, wrong, or normal. During this season of the High Holy Days, as we move from cheerful celebration of creation to reflective repentance of wrongdoings, our goal is not merely to pray for, give out, and ask for forgiveness. Our goal is to become our best selves. We cannot do that if we don't claim our identities. We cannot forgive anyone, least of all ourselves, if we're not honest about who we are, who we want to be, and how we're showing that to the world. How can we apologize for hurting someone else if we constantly hurt ourselves by being afraid to stand up for ourselves? Rabbi Zusia knew that when he died and went before God, God was not going to ask him why he wasn't like Moses or Akiva or even his next door neighbor. God, Zusia taught, would only ask, why were you not Zusia? Why were you not true to yourself? And why did you let others determine who you should be? Why did you not stand up and strongly tell the world who you are, what you believe, and show everyone how you can live your best life? During this period of reflection, may we challenge ourselves to know ourselves and to be ourselves. May we use these 10 days of awe to be awed by our own power and persons. And may we be like the Rooster Prince, unafraid to discover what we are, what makes us our best, and not bend to anyone else's rules. Kein Yehi Ratzon.